This is from Luke chapter 24. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Ian, very much indeed. Just to get your minds racing, we're going to come back to it in a little while, but I want you to remember back to your childhood. What was the one thing that your parents put on your plate that you just really, really, really didn't want to eat? Okay, so just have that little thought in your mind, because we're going to come back to it. But otherwise, if you want to have the Bible open, it's on page 1061. Last week, we ended in verse 12 with a perplexing scene. The stone is rolled away. There's no body in the tomb. There's angels saying he's not here. There's the promise. There's the smell in the air of resurrection. But as yet, there's no Jesus. Now, we know that Luke knows lots of resurrection stories, but he majors on this one in his gospel. If you look over to Acts 1, verse 3, Luke, who also wrote Acts, says this. He says, "After his suffering, he showed himself to these men and gave many convincing proofs that he was alive. He appeared to them over a period of 40 days and spoke about the kingdom of God." So Luke knows lots of stories, but actually, this is the main one that he gives us in chapter 24. So he clearly thinks of all the stories he's got, this is the one that should command our attention. Now remember, we are still on the evening of the first Easter Sunday. A lot has happened in a short period of time, but it's that first Sunday as these dear two disciples trudge away from Jerusalem. Who are they, I hear you ask? Well, Luke names one of them as Cleopas. He doesn't name the other. We don't know why. Maybe everyone knew who the other one was. Maybe Luke didn't know. We don't know. There is an interesting cross-reference in John 19, verse 25, which is John's description of the cross. And John says in that verse, "Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, his mother's sister Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene." So some commentators think that Clopas, husband of Mary, stood at the foot of the cross, standing courageously and faithfully, is the same as our Cleopas here in Luke 24. It is possible, but we just don't know. What we do know is that they are crushed in spirit. Look at their reaction in verse 17. When Jesus asked them that fantabulously open-ended question, they stood still, their faces downcast. There they are, walking away from Jerusalem, and when he asked this question, they're so despondent, they literally stand still. They just don't have the words to say. They can't carry on walking. They're not part of the 12, but they were close enough to Jesus to feel that full weight of the disappointment of his death really deeply. We also know that they were courageous. Think about it, to talk openly with a stranger on the road just 3 days after the crucifixion of Jesus is in and of itself a bold act, one that could have backfired on them or identified them as his followers. Think about Peter just those 4 days before and his fear. And last of all, what we do know about them is that they're going the wrong way. They're trudging towards Emmaus, perhaps it's their home village or a suitable stopping point on the way home. In their minds, it's game over. Jesus is dead. They can't even hear good news in those first wild reports that the tomb is empty. It just feels like further humiliation. They're thinking, well, they wouldn't leave Jesus alone even in death. You're going to have to wait till next week to see more clearly what happens, unless you can't resist reading to the end of the passage. The question that dominates the first half of this Emmaus Road encounter, I think, is this. This is the question that for me dominates. Why didn't they recognize the stranger on the road as Jesus? Why? Luke gives us some clues. Verse 16 of chapter 24 says, they were kept from recognizing him. Then in verse 31, which we'll get to next week, then their eyes were opened. I don't think it's that Jesus was completely different, that he'd been fitted out with a new ID post-resurrection as a kind of weird first century witness protection scheme. He's still the same. Luke and John tell us that he showed the disciples the scars of his sacrifice. He still bears them. This is God's doing that they couldn't see him. They're not yet ready to see Jesus. So the lack of recognition is symbolic of a deeper truth of their continuing spiritual blindness. There are things that they need to learn, to appreciate, to understand first. And it's very telling that Luke uses this same language on two important related connections. In chapter 9, Luke records, it was hidden from them. It being Jesus' prediction that the Son of Man would be betrayed. So way back, Jesus says the Son of Man's going to be betrayed. They can't get it. It was hidden from them. Again, in chapter 18, Luke records, its meaning was hidden from them. The it there is Jesus' fuller prediction that the Son of Man would be handed over and killed and would eventually rise again. So twice in the Gospel already, Luke has used this language. There's something that they don't yet understand. They can't comprehend. It has to be revealed to them. So all along, this, the suffering of the Messiah, this, the cross, is the sticking point. Now, remember back to that thing on your plate that you couldn't or wouldn't eat. For me, it was a spoonful of Swede. Okay? This is the spoonful of Swede on a child's plate. This is the thing they can't swallow. This is the thing they cannot comprehend or accept, the suffering of the Messiah. Let's dig deeper. Jesus looked very ordinary in this moment and in all of his life, remarkably so. We were looking a few weeks ago at Isaiah 53, verse 2. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. Mary doesn't recognize Jesus in the garden, though it is dark and she is weeping, nor do the disciples on the shores of Galilee. There isn't yet the radiant glory of Jesus' ascended body as we see in the book of Revelation. Jesus is here very ordinary. He's not shining. He's not emanating. And this isn't how a made-up story of the resurrected Jesus would go. A made-up story of the resurrection would have Jesus instantly recognized and hailed as the risen Christ, no questions asked. We know this because we have made-up stories of the resurrected Jesus that were written about 100 years later. The most famous are the so-called, although they're not, the so-called Gospels of Peter and Thomas that were written about 100 years after the death of Jesus. In the Gospel of Peter, when it comes to Jesus' resurrection, Jesus is described as he walks out of the tomb as being taller than the sky, and he's accompanied by a talking cross. That's what happens when people make up stories about the resurrection. Here, we have confusion, blindness, fear, disbelief. So what's the heart of the blindness? The heart of the blindness was that Jesus still had much to teach them. There was more for them to grasp. Listen to Cleopas's summary of their hopes for Jesus. It's in verse 19. This is, you know, he's describing how they saw Jesus and what they wanted. He was a prophet, tick. He was powerful in word and deed before God and all the people, tick. We had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel, sort of tick. This is Cleopas's view. If Jesus is redeeming Israel, he should be defeating pagan Romans and not dying at their hands. Or he might have said, we wanted to be released from slavery to Rome as Israel was rescued from Egypt. He wanted an end to occupation. He's thinking economic and political and circumstantial. Jesus says, Cleopas, you weren't thinking deeply enough. You weren't thinking big enough. That's why Cleopas can't yet see the risen Jesus. That's why Jesus needs to take him back to those Old Testament scriptures as we saw through Lent. His summary simply, did not the Christ have to suffer these things? Listen again to verses 20 and 21. Again, this is Cleopas speaking. They crucified him. They crucified him, he complains to Jesus. Crucifixion in Cleopas's eyes being a disastrous end to a promising life. But we had hoped. They crucified him, but we had hoped. And this is taken apart by Jesus. His opening words are pretty strong. How foolish you are. Jesus says, it's not they crucified him, but we had hoped. It's they crucified and this was always how God planned it. The Old Testament is not a long story of God redeeming Israel from suffering. It's a long story of God redeeming the world through Israel's suffering, which is Jesus' suffering. There was always a deeper, greater prize. We hear it all the way back in Genesis 12 in the promise to Abraham. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Let me offer you three possible stages of this journey with Jesus that you might be on. Because many of us have gone through a similar journey. And one of the reasons why Luke's brilliant story is so compelling is because it's so easy just to pop ourselves with imagination onto that road. Such a powerful, long, involved, brilliant story. And it may be, of the three, that you feel you're on the early steps of that journey with Jesus. To be honest, you don't even sense properly that he's with you, that he's alongside you. It might be something that you can only see later in life. Life is pointless at this stage of the journey. We feel as though we are trudging alone, or even if we're with somebody else, as Cleopas was, it still feels pointless. The mood is one of despondency. And if you feel that you are on those very, very early steps, then the best possible prayer is simply to say, Jesus, show me yourself. Open my eyes. Show me who you are. I need your hand. I need to hear you speak. I need my horizons to be changed. So if that's you, if your early steps are on this road, then that's the prayer. Show me yourself. Speak to me. Show me where you are. Because at the moment, this feels like alone. This feels like a desert. Feels like the wilderness. Maybe you're a little bit further on. The journey is sometimes, this journey with Jesus is sometimes, not always, sometimes the journey we make is from being a sufferer, from experiencing things that are difficult and bad in the world, from being downcast. The journey is from there, from despair that things are pointless. And that journey somehow changes, and it becomes to the place where we have the realization that we are a sinner in need of a new heart. So we kind of started with despondency, with pointlessness. And then Jesus has come alongside us and said, it's deeper. It's more radical than simply you've been hurt or that things are hard. It's deeper. The demands of my gospel are more demanding than that, more radical. The cut is going to go deeper. And if that's where you are, it is a beautiful moment, but it's one that requires courage. It's not that we lay aside our problems, forget about them, but we let Jesus say to us, there are deeper things to be done. There are graver things to be addressed. Are you ready? Do you want to hear what the Son of Man did and why he came and why he had to take your place on the cross? And if that's where you are, keep going. Go deeper. Push, push, push. Maybe you're a bit further on again. You're ready to hear from him. You understand what Cleopas and his friend said when they said, were not our hearts burning within us? You've heard God speak. You've met him in the breaking of bread, as Cleopas and his companion do. We see him. We know him. But we see him and we know him not as a failed hero, which is what he was to Cleopas at the start of that journey. He was a failed hero. We don't know him as a failed hero. We know him as the Son of God, the Son of Man, the Messiah, now risen in glory. And if that's where you've got to, the third step on the journey, which we'll look at in much more detail next week, this is the time. This is the moment. What do? They gladly drop everything and they run all the way back to Jerusalem, 7 miles. And the reason they do so is they've realized, they've seen, the kingdom has come. There are people to tell. There are new lives of hope to be lived. Amen.